Item nine. Is the Army Corps represented?
Yes, sir.
They are here, okay.
They're behind me.
Okay. Very good. Just wanted to make sure you were here.
Good morning, Mr. Commissioner, associate members. My name is Jeffrey Madden. I've been with this operation for 20 years. I am the man on the ground in Northumberland and Westmoreland County and a handful of counties in the western part of the state, about as far west in Virginia as you can get. What we have before us today is a request by the Army Corps of Engineers to dredge approximately 48,000 cubic yards of fossilized oyster-laden sediment from two shell dredge sites in the vicinity of the Tri-Bell Shoals in the James River. The processed sediment is expected to yield approximately 24,000 cubic yards of clean oyster shell, which will then be combined with riprap and placed on seven established oyster reef sanctuary sites on Baylor ground located south of the Route 200 bridge crossing of the Great Wacomica in Northumberland County. The project is protested by a number of area watermen. Here's an establishing slide. Basically, there's two phases to the operation. The first large red line that I put in there shows that the location of Tri-Bell Shoals on the James River. It's location here. This is an established site that we've been mining oyster shell for some time. The other one is the other line here shows the oyster replenishment phase, which is up on the Great Wacomica River on Northumberland County. You'll see here that this is the Potomac River and the bay. This is the mining site. You'll see quite quickly that there's two sites here in the upper right-hand corner of the slide, one and two. They're off the channel. There's the Tri-Bell Shoals channel. Kings Mill Golf Course is over here on the right, Kings Mill area. I believe that Jamestown is down to the right off the slide. Here's a little closer view of the fossil shell mining site, if you will. The Northing and Eastings are here, which are basically the corners of the site. Once again, you'll see it's off the channel. Here's the center line of the channel, the shipping channel. There's the second site. And I'll move into the narrative. As I mentioned a moment ago, there are two distinct phases. The initial mining operation will be conducted in an area about 22 miles north of Hampton Roads. The mining operation is similar to that proposed has been conducted for several years along these shoals. The Corps expects, as I mentioned a moment ago, to mine a total of 48,000 cubic yards with a smaller yield once they have hydraulically removed the material using a cutter head dredge. The dredge will pump the shell-laden material to an on-site shell screening cleaning plant. The equipment separates and sizes the oyster shells, cleans it as well, and according to contract specifications. An elephant trunk will then convey the material, the discharge material, and wash water and fines back down into the mining pit or that mining site without impacting adjacent oyster beds. The recovery rate is approximately 50 to 60%. Accordingly, the Corps expects to yield approximately 24,000 cubic yards of material. As I mentioned a moment ago, it'll then be processed on site and then transported up to these sites up here. These are the established reef sites. And this is the Route 200 bridge that I mentioned in the introduction. This is Glebe Point, the county seat in Kilmarnock is down south here, and Reedville is over in this direction. This is the Great Wacomica River. The sites extend from Glee Point Bridge down to Sandy Point. What I'd like to do now is to go over each of the sites kind of individually. Each of the sites will be handled just a little bit differently. First of all, I want to point out here, and it doesn't come out that clear on this drawing, but this is what's going to be laid down on the substrate. There'll be approximately 6 inches of finer shell and 6 inches of larger shell. What the applicant would like to do is the applicant would like to place the base layer will be composed of shell less than 2 inches in size, with the top layer being composed of shell material greater than 2 inches in size. In addition, this drawing shows that the applicant would like to use class 1 armor stone and place the armor stone on the reefs as a deterrent to poaching. Here's one of the sites. This particular site, this is the one that's closest to the Route 200 bridge, and this is reefs 1, 2, and 3. If you look carefully, you'll see a variety of things on this slide. First of all, I'd like to show you that the gold or yellow area, as soon as the arrow shows up, these are the sanctuary sites along this line. Here's another sanctuary site here. It's reef number 3. First thing you'll notice when you look at this is you'll see that the applicant has established a 30-foot wide buffer between the edge of the sanctuary site and, in this case, scraping and the deposition of shell. The blue hashed area here is an area on these two reefs where they're going to scrape any of the live oysters off there before they put the shell down, the fossil shell down, to recover some of the material. This material will then be placed on, and you'll see here in the list here over here, it will be placed on reef 16, which I'll note in a few moments. Let's move. Oh, before we leave here, I should point out that some of the proximity of the Russell lease and the Henderson lease, these are two of, and there's another lease over there, these are two of the, I believe, 8 individuals who protested the project. This is actually what they plan to do on the reef. The solid colored areas are areas where the applicant intends to place oyster shells. The stippled areas are areas where they want to leave it alone, where no deposition is expected. That will be true for all the other slides that you see. Also keep in mind that the 30-foot buffer will be maintained. It doesn't show it on that one, but the 30-foot buffer will be maintained throughout on each of the sites throughout the project. Now we're moving downriver. Here we have reef number 4. Reef number 4 is in close proximity to one of the other protestants, the Chesapeake Oyster Farms, which is owned and operated by Jack Booth. In this particular reef, there isn't going to be any scraping at all. All they're going to do is place, I don't want to say all, but what they intend to do is to place material on this particular reef location. This is reef number 8, a little further downstream. As you might have noted here, reef number 8 will have scrape. They'll scrape off the old oyster material that's there on site, and then place the material, remember, 1 foot of smaller shell, I'm sorry, 6 inches of smaller shell, 6 inches of larger shell in the areas that are highlighted are in solid color here. That would be in these areas marked in brown and solid green. In this area, there are no anticipation of placement along in the sanctuary. It doesn't show up. Could you shut the lights off, please? Probably would help in this particular slide. I probably should have said that before. The glare on this is kind of heavy, but you'll see that in this particular site, this is an established site here. On reef number 10, what they'd like to do is recover and scrape only. And these reef resources will then be placed on reef number 8. So when I go to the next slide, it won't show that there's any deposition on this sanctuary site here. This is reef 13. Reef 13 happens to be a reef where it's in relatively shallow water. So in addition to the placement of shell material, as I'm noting here, signage is also going to be installed, looking like this, to warn boaters. This particular one's kind of shallow. In this particular reef, this is where some of the scraped, this is reef number 16. Reef number 16 is where some of the, well where we're going to place the scraped oyster resources. Here's the budget, really, how much the shell, the quantities of shell that the Army Corps of Engineers anticipates placing on the individual reefs. And you'll see this right here in this column here. Also, it shows the stone per acre of material that they're going to place on the individual and the individual reefs, and also the amount of live oysters they anticipate recovering from the scraped areas. Could I have the lights, please? There's a lot going on in this slide, gentlemen. What I'd like to show you is what it's like out there right now. This is a current oyster lease map superimposed on an aerial photograph. I'd like to point out the reef sites are in blue. And also, while the pointer is down there, there's a lot to be said down in that corner right there, you'll see that the purple shows Baylor ground. Each of the reef sites, right, sanctuary sites, are on Baylor ground. But also note, as we pan through here, the proximity of private leases to the reef sites. Around 2005, the Commission and the Corps entered into a cooperative agreement which designated the Commission as the local sponsor for the Corps' oyster restoration projects in the Great Wicomico River. When the agreement was crafted, the Great Wicomico River was not nearly as productive as is currently found. As such, the proposed activity has come under much greater scrutiny by area leaseholders. The project is protested by numerous commercial watermen and area residents, some of which I pointed out in the previous slides. Many believe that the installation of riprap of any size will have a negative impact on the adjacent leases, on their adjacent leases. Some are worried that the stone will roll on their leases during storms, while others are concerned that the equipment used to deploy the oyster shell will cause prop wash, resulting in siltation of their leases. Concerns have also been raised over the noise created by the shelling activity. Other watermen are concerned that the placement of the riprap on public ground precludes the possibility of the area becoming workable in the future. Others express concerns over the use of fossil oyster shell for the purposes of, since fossil shell is a finite resource, and they believe that it should be used for other purposes. One of the protestants states that he believes that rotational harvest in Virginia has been more effective than sanctuary reefs and are a better use of the finite fossil resources. In an attempt to address some of the concerns raised by the protestants, the Corps included specification in their contract that requires the contractor maintain a 30-foot buffer, which I mentioned a few moments ago. This buffer would be between the replenishment activity and any adjacent private leases. In addition, the contractors may use conveyor belt, clamshell bucket, or vibrating chute to shell the sanctuary areas to reduce siltation, to deliver the product closer to the bottom of the resource. In addition, the protestants' concerns, Commission staff questions the proposal to potentially use large shell for portions of the planning phase of the project. This could result in the waste of shell material being mined from the Tri-Bell Shoals sites. The current proposal calls for a top layer of shell greater than 2 inches and a bottom layer of shells less than 2 inches. Staff feels this could result in too many finds and small shells being returned to the mine site through the elephant trunk, thereby reducing the quality of the material for future use. Staff believes the Corps' specifications should be more in line with our replenishment efforts that require a contractor to use 1-inch screen size to sort the fossil shell material at the dredge mining sites. Staff believes that the placement of 1-inch shell or larger on top of the sanctuary reef is appropriate. If the applicant wishes to regrade the oyster shell following the removal and initial screening and grading at Tri-Bell site, staff would have no opposition to that, of course. However, we believe that the use of 2-inch shell is not in keeping with the state's established efforts to manage the fossil resource in the James River. Staff was also concerned about the use of Class 1 riprap as a poaching deterrent. We believe it to be unwise, not a safe practice. And for the purposes of a little education on the sizing of this material, Class 1 is classified as stone weighing between 50 and 150 pounds, with approximately 60% of the material weighing 100 pounds or more. Staff believes that they should use smaller stone, Class 1A. And Class 1A stone weighs between 25 and 75 pounds, with more than 10% weighing 75 pounds or more. Lastly, staff is concerned over the reluctance of the applicant to limit the draft of the tugs, barges, and workboats using the Great Wicomico River. Unlike the expansive James River, the Great Wicomico is a much narrower waterway. Staff believes that and you can see that the area has currently very productive oyster leases. But also, staff is unsure how the barges and tugs will be able to navigate around the deposition areas while maintaining a 30-foot buffer and not encroach over private oyster leases as they cast the shell. Additionally, the deeper draft vessels may disrupt the bottom, resulting in a scour of sedimentation on baler grounds and the adjoining private leases. Staff believes maintaining a minimum 1.5 foot clearance between the vessel's props and the bottom substrate would reduce the likelihood of unintended grounding on oyster reefs and reduce the potential for prop wash, scour, and sedimentation of private leases. Our summary and recommendation is as follows. SAF is sensitive to the issues raised by the leaseholders of productive oyster grounds in close proximity to the proposed oyster replenishment activities. Staff believes the impact to the adjacent leases and marine resources can be reduced if the permittee agrees to the following special conditions. The first, the use of 1-inch screen, to retain the oyster shell during the dredging mining process, utilizing a sorting protocol similar to that used during commission replenishment projects. The poaching deterrent riprap should be no larger than 1A. Also, staff believes that the applicant should require the applicant to have vessels that maintain a clearance of 1.5 feet at all times. Accordingly, after evaluating the merits of the project against the concerns expressed by those in opposition to the project, and after consideration of all the factors contained in Section 28.2, 1205A of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends approval of the project with the incorporation of the aforementioned special conditions and the following. As with other permits issued by the federal government, we should also note that the following permit condition should be substituted for the standard conditions. To indemnify and save harmless the Commonwealth of Virginia from any liability arising from the establishment, operation, or maintenance of the project. And that's more stipulated as follows. If any loss or damage of the to the Commonwealth is caused by or contributed to in whole or in part by the permittee arising from the establishment, operation, or maintenance of said project, the liability of the permittee, therefore, shall be determined in accordance with the applicable provisions of the Federal Tort Claims Act of August 2nd, 1946, as amended. And that concludes my presentation. If you, of course, have any questions, I'd be happy to field them.
Questions for Jeff at this point? Thank you.
You don't address in your evaluation the 30-foot buffer. Now, when I look at a waterway and think about 30 feet, that's almost just the width of two modern dead rises. That's not very much. Are we really going to be that precise here?
Well, I think that the applicant could probably explain that, considering that was a proffer by the Army Corps of Engineers. I would probably defer to them, sir.
Okay. You don't have any opinion on it?
My opinion?
Yes, sir. You've been here 20 years, feet, as you mentioned.
30 feet is twice the distance between you and I.
Right.
It's a big operation. Big vessels. 30 feet is not far, sir.
Okay.
Any other questions? Ms. Amy.
You mentioned the riprap. The basic purpose of the riprap is to prevent poaching. The riprap is basically to prevent poaching?
Yes, ma'am.
I wasn't aware that there was a problem with poaching in the Great Wacomico. I mean, is there a problem there?
Well, I would, again, Jim Wesson, Dr. Wesson is here, can speak on that matter, as well as the applicant. It's my understanding that there has been some poaching of resources on the reef sanctuary sites. I think from aerial photographs. I think I'll have the applicant explain that. There appears to have been a need for such a thing.
Were there charges placed? I mean, if they have, were there charges? Were there people actually?
I'm not sure about that.
No.
Charge?
That's a good question. Perhaps
I don't know of any case where we've actually brought charges, but you will see evidence from the Corps that suggests poaching has occurred. Yes, Mr. Beck.
They're digging this out of the James River?
Yes, sir.
And what's that, approximately between Carter's Grove and Kings Mill?
Yeah, in the bend of the James River, right near.
And how far down below the surface, the ground surface, how far do they have to dig? How deep?
That's a question for Dr. Wesson.
I think it's been as much as 40 feet or so below the bottom of the James River. This is an area where the state has been mining shell for about, I guess, a decade or more. So they'll be they'll be in the same area.
The reason I ask is that I see shells this big in the bank in front of my house. They're down 15, 18 feet.
Those scallop shells?
Yeah.
Scallop shells? Yes, sir.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
We may want those.
The dark, really almost black ones. That's the fossils.
Other questions? All right, let's hear from the applicant. Thank you, Jeff.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Let me swear you in.
Okay.
You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
Susan Connor, Army Corps of Engineers.
Welcome, Susan.
Thank you for having me today. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak on our project. Let me get this going, actually. Which is the Great Wacomico River Oyster Restoration Rehabilitation. The staff's already told you quite a bit about the project. I'm going to go over that again briefly to add some additional points from our perspective, but also talk about some of the changes that have already been discussed and a few additional changes based on recent concerns that were communicated to us. So just an overview of the whole project. The Great Wicomico project that was constructed in 2004 consists of 85 acres of sanctuary reefs. 55 of those acres are low-relief reef and 30 acres of high-relief reef. This is a bit different than the original acreage that was proposed. The acreage reported here is based on the post-construction surveys. So this reports back shell that was actually placed, and those high-relief reefs are basically 12 inches and above. The low-relief reef is anything below 12 inches. There was $4 million in federal funds used for the construction of this project, and as has already been mentioned, our partner is VMRC. We have a project partnership agreement, which carries with it the responsibility of both the federal government and the Commonwealth to ensure that the project is successful. Eventually, the project will be turned over to VMRC for the long-term maintenance of the project. So why are we proposing the rehabilitation project? Of the 85 acres constructed, approximately 61 of those acres are meeting the definition of success. Reporting is based on monitoring done by Virginia Institute of Marine Science. The success criteria is agreed upon Chesapeake Bay metrics for oyster success, basically 15 grams per meter squared of biomass of oysters, or 15 actual oyster population, 15 per meter squared. So. So about 61 of the acres are meeting those success criteria. We want to go back and rehabilitate the areas that aren't meeting that are appropriate for continued restoration. Generally, the areas that aren't meeting it are areas that were originally built as low relief. A lot of that we feel is because it was built with water cannon, which I'm going to kind of show you the results of the water cannon versus the results of the bucket, which is what we're proposing to use now and why we think that we can more accurately and with less impact bring the low relief up to high relief. And we do believe, and I'm going to show a slide or two, that a few of the reefs were poached, which is why we're also proposing to add the anti-poaching structures on the reefs. Obviously, we believe the benefits of the oyster restoration include both the environmental water filtering benefits and habitat creation, as well as benefits to the private industry and the general oyster industry from the reproduction increases in the tributary. So, as I've already stated, apparently, approximately 61 acres, we feel that to call the Great Wicomico a fully restored tributary by Chesapeake Bay program standards, we need anywhere between 100 and 400 acres total of restored oyster reef. So that means the Great Wicomico is moving towards a restored tributary. From the federal perspective, we have an executive order that mandates our participation in this mission. Executive Order 13508 is a strategy for protecting and restoring the Chesapeake Bay watershed. Also, there's Chesapeake Bay program with which the Commonwealth and other organizations and other states in the Chesapeake Bay participate in. That group has determined a goal within the bay of restoring native oyster habitat and populations to approximately 10 tributaries by 2025. So as has already been discussed, this map reflects what was actually built in the Great Wicomico. It's a busy map. But for our purposes today, what we would focus on are the red areas are basically the high relief, those reefs that were built to a higher level, and the black hatched area, kind of right around, you can see a lot of the outskirts and whatnot here, are the low relief areas. So this is, as I said, we believe that poaching has occurred on several of the reefs noted during our 2011 survey. The evidence that we felt that it was poaching were the market size adult oysters were all missing. The shells were gone. There wasn't fragments left, as you might see for different predation reasons. There weren't full shells that you would see if it was disease. It was basically just the market size oysters were not on the reefs anymore. And that was kind of compared to prior monitoring where the market size oysters were there. So the summary of our current proposal is to rehabilitate those low-relief and poached reefs. It's a total of about 17.6 acres. The plans include the use of the anti-poaching devices. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more and some adjustments that we have made. The general construction method is to go in and collect the healthy oysters, bring the low-relief up to high-relief, replace the healthy oysters, and then come in and place the anti-poaching stones. So we already looked at this map. We did, at the request of VMRC staff, already remove all areas that were deeper than 15 foot. Even though we currently have some healthy oysters still in those areas, they do have anoxia intermittently. So, again, at the request of VMRC, we went ahead and took out all areas greater than 15 feet. So I'm going to go through the construction process. I'm going to go through somewhat quickly because the staff really already briefed a lot of this. Reefs 1 and 2 were the most upriver reefs built. They've not been subject to significant cow nose or predation or poaching. We're just proposing to bring the low relief up to high relief in this area. So next, Reef 3 was originally one of our best reefs. It was about 2 feet off of existing bottoms, but we have seen what we believe is extensive poaching in this area. It's currently mostly all of the live oysters and top shell is gone. The work here is primarily repair, adding a new layer of top shell, and to place the stone to protect that in the future. Before the poaching, it was one of the best reefs. It was doing very, very well. So, and I haven't put this in for every reef, but I just kind of wanted to, again, discuss how our contractors know to go in, what to construct, the different color codes, talk about where shell needs to be placed. On some areas of the reef, it doesn't need to be placed if those areas are already doing well, and we have it broken out by what currently is there, low relief versus high relief, and above and below the 12-foot contour. The next is Reef 4. This is built as high relief reef. Again, had 2 to 3 feet off the bottom, was doing very well, but some poaching has occurred. The poaching wasn't quite as extensive, but it has occurred, and we want to go in and place a new light layer of top shell on that and place the stone. So for Reef 8, this is one of the middle river reefs. Again, just upgrading the low relief that is above the 15-foot depth contour to high relief reef. The bottom conditions we feel are suitable because the high relief reef that was already built there is currently performing well. So this is where Reef 13 is located. This is one of the downriver reefs with hard bottom, silty sand bottom conditions. This is a very shallow reef. This is the one that was mentioned that we will plan to put a navigational sign up to ensure there's no damage. Originally, this was built as a series of small patches, again, with the water cannon. So basically, this is going in and bringing those patches and low relief areas up to a high relief, which we think would be successful in this area. So these are the fossil shell dredging areas. So, as we said, in some areas where we're going to place shells, we don't want to cover up healthy oysters that are already there. So we propose to go in and scrape up healthy oysters on those areas where they exist. This would be done by a patent tong or hand scrape. And once they're brought up, the live oysters would be taken from the tongs and scraped and placed on other reef areas. The dead shell would be thrown back into the scraped areas. I'm not going to go through every – I have a couple slides of the construction process. I'm not going to go through step by step. I don't think it's necessary, but I did want to just explain kind of generally with the first few bullets how this works. Reef 1 and 2, we have a process where we've already laid out exactly how the contractor would work. We'd start by scraping Reef 1 and 2. Those live oysters would be brought up and transported to Reef 16 and planted evenly on the area that's shown on our plans. Then Reef 1 and 2 would have the new shells placed. That would be done, and here's where I'm going to bring up, there was a recommendation from staff to not use the 2-inch shell, and we have agreed to that. We've agreed already to go down to the 1-inch shell, so that concern, hopefully we've been able to respond to that concern. I have a slide later in here where I'm going to show we actually don't think that that's the best proposal. We feel that leaves the reef more open to predation and siltation. You have smaller spaces in between the shells, and we feel it silts over easier. So we are doing that only in response to comments and protests. So we still think we can build the reef that way. It wouldn't be our choice, but we are willing to make that compromise. So, and again, not going to go through each of these, but basically you can see that the oysters are scraped up, put on other healthy reefs, and we kind of do that as we move along to each of the rehabilitation reefs. So, and one, if you look at the last bullet down here, a portion of Reef 10 and 11, that actually isn't one of the rehab reefs, but it has some healthy oysters in a really deep area that we think would be worthwhile to bring those up and put those on one of the newly constructed reefs where we feel there's a higher viability of long-term survival for those oysters. So for the fossil shell placement, compared to water cannon that we've used in the past, we will only allow the contractor to use conveyor belt, large vibrating chute, or clamshell bucket. Recently, we had some Craney Island mitigation reefs you may or may not be familiar with, and the contractor for that actually built a conveyor belt type machinery to actually place the shells just directly on reefs so they're not shot out into the water. So after the fossil shell is placed, Class 1 stone is what we had recommended would be placed randomly and the coordinates recorded for future monitoring process. I'll go back to that Class 1 discussion in a moment. So some of the issues raised and what we've done to try and address those are sedimentation of the private leases. We had not originally had an offset. We did include a 30-foot offset. I understand the concerns that that is not a great amount, but it does ensure that our equipment does have a buffer area to stay away. And it's always a balance between wanting to build our projects, which are directly adjacent to public grounds and lease grounds, and making sure that we can build a successful project. So we do feel that that does at least give a small amount of buffer for that. And with compared to when we were building 10 years ago or so, the GPS and the things that, and the conveyor belt chute that allows us to place directly down into the water, we feel gives us a much better accuracy, a much less chance of bringing any sediment up. This is just an example of, this was one of the reefs that was originally built with the water cannon. The original polygon, kind of where we were aiming to construct, is seen here in the blue line. The red relief, the high relief is the red area, and this gray, all of this gray is low relief reef, basically what was actually placed by the water cannon. So you can see it ended up way outside of our original intended polygon. Compared to a few of the reefs were built with the bucket, which is what we're proposing now. And this is the post-construction survey of one of the reefs built with that bucket. So you can see the polygon right here, and we got very close to what was intended. So one of the issues raised, another issue was the vessel size. It is a contracting limitation. We don't like to tell our contractor exactly what size to use or not use, both from a cost efficiency perspective and a liability perspective. However, the contractor is responsible for using boats that are appropriate in shallow areas. One of the requests of the staff, one of the recommendations at the end was to provide a minimum clearance between the prop and the bottom substrate of 1.5 feet at all times. And our technical team talked earlier in the meeting, and we do feel we can do that. We can add that to our specs. So that's reasonable. It is something that's really hard to enforce. That was our only concern with that, is it's not easy to enforce that, but we can add it, and we already always have our quality folks out there, so they would be doing their best to enforce that requirement. So this is a complicated one, I think. We originally proposed the Class 2 larger stones. We did feel like this was a deterrent to folks going in and poaching. Obviously, when we spend federal funds on a project, we need to ensure the long-term viability of the project. We don't have the law enforcement and tracking. Those are not things under our mission or purview from the Corps of Engineers perspective. The stones are what we propose to do to deter the poaching. Based on protest, folks did not like the large stones. We came back and said, okay, we can do the Class 1 stones. I hear today the staff recommendation is to use Class 1A size stones. Again, that's something we are willing to do and make that compromise. It worries me a bit because I know also from talking to some of the folks in the audience and reading some of the letters that some folks may still have concerns with that because they feel that the stones may move, that have the possibility of moving in the water column if we have a storm, a nor'easter, or a hurricane come through, the smaller stones are more likely to move. So I do have in here right here. So we did do a calculation. Maximum velocity in the entrance of the Great Waccamaco is about 1.5 feet per second. A velocity of several orders of magnitude greater is required to move a VDOT Class 1 stone. It's based on Corps and USGS stream protection manuals. So we did do a calculation. We feel very confident that especially the Class 2 and Class 1 stones would not move. We haven't done the calculation on the Class 1A. We would be willing to put those in if it is needed to build the project. But we would continue to recommend a larger stone, but we're willing to make that compromise. Go back here. Okay. So those stones are the ones that we would still recommend. They are the 50 to 150 pounds with an average dimension of 12 inches. depth, and that's what the calculations that we did to show that they would not, we do not believe that they would move. So there's also concern with, obviously, the stones would make it hard in the future to harvest or work those grounds. That, since that is the intent of our project, is to build sanctuaries, we feel it's a very reasonable proposal. As far as monitoring the areas, obviously, all of those stones would have the GPS coordinates. We would know where they were located. So if we need to go in there for monitoring, long-term maintenance, it's not a problem. And I would like to add here, because, again, from talking to some folks in the audience, I know that, that part of the issue with the core restoration is building sanctuaries versus the rotational harvest. And we've spent a lot of time over the last year talking about compromising on that, and the core has been and continues to be willing to build rotational harvest. But we still, even if we did do that, we would want some sanctuaries built also. So from a larger Chesapeake Bay perspective, we understand the need for the balance of having both. Already went over that. So, and basically this is just goes back to the 2-inch versus 1-inch. We are willing to go to the 1-inch. We think that it's not our preference, because we think there could be a much higher predation rate in the smaller shell and a much higher likelihood of sedimentation. So in conclusion, just wanted to thank you for the opportunity to discuss our project. We do feel every comment or protest that has come to us, we have tried to make some adjustments and address. We can only change so much before it's we want to continue to ensure that we're building a successful project. So we feel like we've made a lot of compromises. I also wanted to thank both the Nature Conservancy and the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, which I know have some representatives in attendance and have shown some amount of support for the project. So we appreciate their support, as it is all of our long-term goals to restore oysters to Chesapeake Bay. And that's my presentation, unless you have any questions.
There'll probably be some
technical
questions.
Team members.
Do you have others that you want to speak
not
for the project?
Not from our team, no.
Okay. First question, one of the conditions that the staff is recommending that I don't think you commented on was that the applicant agree to coordinate an on-site meeting between the contractor, once he's selected, and the oyster planting ground leaseholders.
Absolutely. We concur with that, and that would be our plan in any case. So not a problem. We agree with that.
All right. Other questions? Mr. Close.
How big are the, like, barges that you're going to bring in there with shells? I mean, how big are they? And how big are the tugs that you're going to use, or whatever vessels you're going to use to transport the shells?
Sure. So that's not exactly specified in our plans and specs, again, because we try and, for cost efficiency and liability purposes, we try not to tell contractors exactly how to do the work. But the reasons we feel comfortable with that is they there are requirements in for not harming or causing impact to any of the areas, so they have to use vessels that are appropriate for the size. We agreed to the 1.5-foot clearance underneath the vessels, so that would ensure that they're smaller vessels. Also, I think I forgot to mention that the within the specs is also the requirement that none of the vessels go over private areas. They have to access the sanctuary reefs from the main channel, and they cannot go over, in addition to the buffer, they can't just travel over the private lease grounds in order to get to any of the reefs. And finally, our contractor, they have to come back to us with a list of what equipment they plan to use, and we would not approve it if it was inappropriate and would cause any damage to the area. So we basically get a back check of what the contractor proposes to do.
Any other questions? Mr. Sessions.
And I'm not familiar with restoring oyster grounds, but isn't broadcasting riprap on reefs and a navigable waterway an extreme measure? It just seems to me, being, you know, I enjoy boating, and broadcasting riprap in a waterway seems kind of extreme to me.
Well, most of these are at a depth where they're not going to cause the problem. They're an average of 12 inches, and then they would settle a bit into the sediment, so it would be less than 12 inches is up. We have obviously had our engineers look from a navigational perspective to make sure that they're not in areas where they would be a navigational hazard, other than the one shallow area where we added a sign. So we feel that it's an appropriate measure. We don't feel it's extreme. It's a, it is the way that we have to protect the project.
And that's to prevent poaching.
Right. So equipment, anyone trying to poach the reefs would have problems getting their equipment over boulders.
Would there ever be any thoughts of that being an active reef for harvesting at some point in time down the road?
Part of the agreement between the state and the Commonwealth are these long-term are for sanctuary oyster restoration purposes.
Yeah, let me speak to that as well. Back in the 2003, 2004 time period, the state, through VMRC, agreed to partner with the Corps for this project. And part of that agreement is that these sites that you have seen will remain as permanent sanctuaries in perpetuity.
Okay.
At some point, the state will have to take over maintenance of those areas once they're completed, but that's the agreement. So I think we can say, you know, these areas are not going to be open for harvest at any time,
okay,
based on that agreement.
I have a follow-up question. What is your experience with this type of riprap on reefs and other locations that you may have used or worked on?
We have not used this type of riprap in any of our construction projects in Virginia, but it's not very much different from alternate substrate, which most of the oyster restoration community wants to work towards using alternate substrate, large pieces of granite or concrete in the water rather than fossil shell. We all realize that and agree and sympathize with the concerns about fossil shell being a limited resource. Therefore, we want to move towards using alternative material, and that's what Maryland's doing, the Baltimore District Corps of Engineers. A lot of their reefs are hard material with just a shell veneer on top. So we have not used boulders, per se, directly in our Virginia construction, but Maryland has used large pieces of granite and concrete very similarly in their sanctuary waters, and it works fine. From that perspective, it hasn't caused damage. And like I said, what we're talking about at this point, especially now that we've gone down from Class 2 to Class 1 or potentially even Class 1A, are quite small rocks that we're talking about.
Mr. Erskine.
Susan, I appreciate, you know, all the efforts that the Corps has done, and as you can probably understand by now, the Great Wicomico is a pretty important resource, you know, to the Commonwealth, the private industry, and the public fishery as well. And I do have a concern over the amount of shells that, you know, you're talking about, I guess, 48,000 cubic yards. And if calculations are right, maybe that's 700,000 bushels, maybe shy of that a little bit. On 17 acres, that seems like quite a bit. Typically, you might see an industry, and I'd defer to others maybe, but 2,000 to 3,000 bushels per acre, and I guess you're looking at 40,000 bushels of shell per acre. And you just mentioned that it's a finite resource, and I think we all agree with that. So the concern, I guess, is this is a sanctuary, permanent sanctuary, essentially, and sanctuaries are fine. But if it's not going to be harvested, and that's the intent now and in the future, was there any thought to using an alternative substrate and not using shells? And, for example, the granite pieces would go down, and then you'd put a light layer of shells. We all know oysters are going to attach to the kitchen sink and rubber tires and oyster shells and everything else. Was there any thought as to limiting the use of these finite resources and using something else?
Sure. I mean, you brought up a lot there, so I have a lot of things I want to respond. But we would love to use alternative substrate on any of our sanctuary reefs. That would be our absolute top preference. The situation that we're in here, though, is the Army Corps of Engineers, we partner with non-federal sponsors. The Commonwealth and the Virginia Marine Resources Commission is our non-federal sponsor. Therefore, they have to provide 25% of the match. None of the state budget has gone towards these sanctuary projects, so the match that VMRC provides is the fossil shell resource. So in order for us to construct, we have to have some kind of match, and the only thing that is available to match is the fossil shell resource. So that, you know, the response is we would love to build on alternative substrate, and I think everyone in the restoration community agrees that's the way to go, but we are limited in our business model. I did want to also just one or two other things that you mentioned. as far as the 48,000 cubic feet, and I can't do the bushel calculation. But because we did agree to go from the 2-inch to 1-inch, that would actually be a little bit less. We'll get a little bit better efficiency. We'll get about 15% better efficiency. And I, again, can't do the calculation what that equates to, but it's a little bit less than 48,000 since we made that compromise. And I know from talking to Mr. Wesson quite a bit the difference between the what's put down in, say, the rotational harvest or even the state sanctuaries versus our sanctuary reef, but all of our monitoring has showed that the high relief reef is what has the long-term success. It's high enough out that doesn't get sedimented over. The oysters grow at a rate there that we believe that is what is needed to develop the long-term self-sustaining population. So I concur with you that it is more than is placed by the state, but we feel that that's what's necessary to develop this type of oyster reef.
Other questions? All right.
I have just a question.
Dr. New.
Again, with the riprap, how small a stone do you feel is effective as a poaching deterrent? Do you feel that staff's recommendation is taking you out of that range?
I think it is taking us a little out of our comfort level. This project is very important to us, so we're trying to make the compromises necessary to move forward while still being successful. I think that the class, and I'm not an expert in this, but we've had several technical discussions on this issue. We felt the class one would still be a deterrent. The class 1A, we think it'll be a deterrent. It may. I think it would not probably be as effective as the class one. I think it's still worth putting down. I think it would still be a deterrent if someone ran in, you know, was trying to harvest and ran into that, but probably not as effective as the class one.
And would you be comfortable with class one doing the job?
We would prefer to use the class one, not the class 1A.
With regards to the deterrent, the poaching device, the balls, I guess, why was it round? Why wouldn't you put, you know, there are concerns about it rolling onto private leases and rolling onto public ground. Why wouldn't you use something that didn't roll?
Okay. I'm going to defer in a minute to our technical team. But I don't think it's necessarily round. It's just a certain speed-up specification for rock. But, Mark, can you help me answer
sure.
that? Yeah. Mr. Mark Hudgens of our engineering.
Mark, good to see you. You swear to tell the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you. Please state your name.
Sure. The we're talking about graded riprap that has.
Say your name. Sir.
Yeah, Mark Hudgens.
Thank you.
Hudgins.
Thank you.
The graded riprap is we said it was in different sizes, so it's not perfectly round. It can be oblique, oblong, and with a median, I think our dimension was 6-inch minimum width. That
okay.
It's not that they're all going to be.
They're not all going to be exactly round. It's going to be a graded riprap.
Right. Okay. But they're all 12 inches. Is that what you said on average? They're 12 inches in height.
That's an average dimension.
Okay.
I mean, it probably could go as much as 15 or 16, and down as small as 9. That's kind of an average.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you, Mark.
Yeah. If you don't mind, sir, with your permission, I'd like to give these letters that were given to me in the hallway.
Sure. Are there others who wish to speak in favor of this project? Dr. Lipsius?
Yes, Commissioner, I'm not speaking so much in favor, but addressing some of the issues that are actually, I guess, beneficial to the Corps' point. Commissioner Tankard asked about the riprap, and actually we have conducted a 3-year study on different sizes of riprap, a separate 2-year study looking at large boulder size, average of 12 inches, and in all cases they are quite effective as equally effective as shell, good shell. The other thing that I think needs to be borne in mind with the riprap is that they will probably sink to around the height of the reef or just above. So I don't expect those to actually be sitting on top of the reef. In addition to that, they will sink, as Ms. Connor stated. Regarding the poaching, what it is, Ms. Connor, again, didn't have that data, but we have data showing the different, basically, analysis of samples where some were just so obviously to us poached. That is that in this site we have clusters with many, many large oysters, several inches or a few inches, and then we would get to these other samples. So we did the monitoring for that. We would get to other sites where all we found were single oysters about that size. No large oysters, no large dead, no clusters. It was pretty obvious, a lot of breakage as far as the shell, so I think it was pretty obvious. The final point that I'd like to make concerns the idea of sanctuaries. And the use of sanctuaries is now becoming, in addition to complementary harvest grounds, is now viewed as one of those approach that basically maximizes both yield, fishery yield, and also the ecological restoration. Because the larvae that are coming off those sanctuaries, they're going everywhere. And we have hydrodynamic models that show they're not just going back to the sanctuaries, they're going throughout the system. And some of the initial data we examined appears to or suggests that what has happened since the coral reefs were built, when they first started to reproduce in 2006, that the level of recruitment in the Waikamako has consistently been high. And we haven't seen that in any other tributaries. Yes, you get the spikes in other locations. You get the same sorts of spikes, but it's been consistently high recruitment. So, you know, my view as a scientist is that you can actually have your cake and eat it too. You can build the sanctuaries that are going to send larvae to themselves, but also to other parts of the system.
Okay. Mr. Erskine.
Rahm, in you brought up a couple points about, and Susan did as well, the sinking of this Class 1 or Class 2 riprap. But we're talking about putting 40,000 bushels of shell per acre. That's going to stand to probably not sink down 12 inches. We put oyster cages in the water on far fewer thousands of bushels per acre, and they don't sink more than an inch.
I agree.
So you're going to have riprap that's certainly up in the water column. It's not going to sink down 12 inches.
Right, but most of that will be below the minimum, 6 to 8 feet. Most of that is built on bottom around 10 to 15 feet in depth, so it shouldn't pose any additional hazard. The other thing that's actually beneficial about using riprap is that it offers angled surfaces. One of the things we did find is that if you have, like, the concrete tabletop sort of device, that you don't get as high settlement on a flat surface like that as you do on angled surfaces. So the riprap actually is one of the best alternative materials.
I would agree with using it for the entire reef.
Thank you.
While you're here, our suggestion of the one-inch screen, what's your take on that?
Well, I would follow exactly what Susan said. That is that it would be preferable on a top layer to have larger shells.
Right.
But I think if you can put that as a base layer and then also augment it with some of the additional clusters from the other reefs, it should do fairly well. It's not going to do as well as if you had all clean shell. I mean, I think we would all agree on that, but given the limitations of the shell resource, then that seems to be a reasonable compromise in my view.
Thank you.
Others who wish to speak in favor of the proposal? Who wishes to speak against the proposal? All right, we'll just take you one at a time. Let me do this. All of you who wish to speak in opposition, if you could stand and let me swear you all in at one time, and then we'll dispense with that. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you.
Good morning. Glad for the opportunity to speak here. I come before you frustrated.
Let's have your name for the record.
Wade Hall. I'm frustrated and I'm regretful, but I'm also hopeful. I'm frustrated. There's a lot of things I see go on in government from the top to the bottom. And I'm regretful because I've never done anything about it and spoken about it, but I'm going to change that now. And I'm also hopeful because I've spoken with some of the people, Susan O'Connor and all, and they seem to be really willing to work with people. And you might ask what qualifies me to be up here. I'm 42 years old. I've got 40 years of experience on the Great Waikamako. I've got a picture of myself when I was 2 years old on my grandfather's culling board putting oysters in the basket. I don't remember that. My father did it. My grandfather did it. His father did it in the early 1900s on these same grounds. and they've all passed that information down to me. So I know quite a bit about what works up there and what does not work. And I'm excited about the project because the Corps has a lot of shell resource that's going to be contributed, and the financial resource is there. What I'm really concerned about a lot of the ways that it's been proposed to do. To me, addressing the poaching issue, I know nothing of poaching going on up there. I'm up there all the time. And if there is, it really concerns me because I've got a lot of resource up there myself. And to me, though, poaching is a law enforcement issue, not putting something on bailer grounds that can stymie productivity forever. You know, and VMRC has done a great job with poaching. There's other areas in the state now. You guys have had people before you, and you've plucked that seed out. You've removed people's licenses, I think, for a year and 2 years. And to me, that's how the poaching needs to be addressed. You know, if that goes on, it needs to be convicted and crucify the person doing it, but not, you know, damage that area forever to produce horses. That's one concern I have. The rocks, which is also with the concern of poaching, I have a large area of lease ground inside one of these areas where the rocks are going to go. And they say the normal tide flows, that's great. They're not going to move the rocks. And they probably won't. But I know that one piece of ground inside of the creek I had, it was a piece of iron ore. It was in the middle of the ground, and the guy I bought it from said, watch out for that. It was probably as big as this podium and in the ground. And I tried my best to move that rock with the grappling, and I broke line, and the rock won. I couldn't move it. Well, Isabel came along, and all the damage and devastation we had, I didn't go back to the ground for a while, but I came back to that ground, and the swirling tide, surge, and who knows what, that rock had been a couple hundred yards offshore. That piece of iron ore was up on the bank underneath the leaded dock. Now tell me that they're going to put all these rocks off of my ground, and a storm's not going to come along, and who knows where they're going to be. And I've got tens of thousands of dollars of sweat, blood, and tears on my ground. And, you know, that's going to ruin me. And the Corps is going to be gone, and the commission is going to be here, and I'm going to be stuck holding the bag. You know, that is one of my primary concerns. You know, there's other ways of dealing with poaching. Remove the poacher. Prosecute. You know, that's, to me, like he said, that's kind of extreme beyond belief. Because, just not the way to deal with it. Another concern of mine, these contractors, you were talking about the 30-foot buffer. It's nowhere. And, you know, the contractor, who are they? Who's vetted them? How responsible are they? You know, when someone's not out there looking at them on a Friday evening, are they going to come in with their barge and blow shell all over my shore, which in theory you would think would be great, but it's going to ruin my big oysters that I've got there. Who's going to, you know, watch that and keep that from happening? There's just not enough specified things to me to be happy with it. That's another concern. The need of a sanctuary, I understand. And Virginia's done a great job doing that, you know, with these different sanctuaries and all the rivers. The commission has done that on the Baylor grounds. But I think we just have so much natural sanctuary, the heads of the creeks, little areas on rocks, on riprap. If you go around the creek and look on the riprap at low tide, it's just thousands of bushels of oysters everywhere. And one quick example, I'm not going to go on forever, but I'm going to be brief if I can. Last February, we had a northwester for about a week, and the tide was tremendously low, and we couldn't work, which was fine with me in that weather. It was bad, but the guy that worked with me needed to work. He came to me and said, you know, I need to work. What can I do? Well, I said, I'll just loan you some money. He said, I want to work. Long story short, he went up in a cove on my ground, and in a place probably from that wall to that wall, picked up 20 bushels of oysters in an area you could never, ever, ever harvest, except that rare exception, big as my hand, that we didn't even know were up there. And I called Northumberland. I think they had 880 miles of waterfront just in Northumberland County, you know, because a straight line is very crooked, water line is. And all that is a natural sanctuary, that these oysters grow and live. And the Baylor grounds that they're going to take are the very few finite grounds that were set aside long ago by our forefathers to harvest. You know, so that's another concern I have. But I could go on, but I think I'll just close with that. And a 94-year-old guy who's been down here before, Ernest Delano, told me, he's been in the industry all of his life, that oyster ground is like a garden. You've got to work it and maintain it and continually working it or the stuff goes in the bottom. You know, putting these rocks out here, who's going to work it and maintain it? It just, you know, but I would be interested in working with whoever to help, because I've got a lot of knowledge, and I think I can work with them and help, you know, help them in the right direction. That's
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Hall? Thank you, sir. Who's next? Yes, ma'am.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm Pamela Russell. I'm a native of Mila in Northumberland County, and I've lived on the Great Wicomico all my life. You've all got copies of my remarks. My family's been in the oyster business as far back as I can trace, and I can trace back to the late 1600s. We've been in business at Mila since 1892. We had an oyster house. I currently have a little bit more than 25 acres of oyster ground, which has been in my family and regularly worked since the mid-60s. My father sold 40 acres of ground that we had around Mila to Ernie Harding, and Ernie works it now, and he works my ground too, and he couldn't be here today because he's on Christmas orders. So my ground at Blackwell's is split into three pieces, and the third piece, which is right off Horn Harbor, which you've seen, is directly adjacent to Reefs 1, 2, and located very close to Reef 3. I have attached the picture that you've already seen. That Horn Harbor shore is my nursery. It's where my family and I have always planted our shells. We plant that piece regularly. I move those shells. I move the seed oysters. I sell some seed, and I move the others to the other two pieces of hard ground, grow and harvest mature oysters. Last spring, I worked that piece. I sold seed, and I didn't move all of the seed, so it's planted. That Horn Harbor piece has got live, mature, growing oysters on it right now. The strike from 2012 was so heavy that even in harvesting, I was still breaking up little clusters, and there'll probably be more seed there next spring. I'm opposed to the Corps for a number of reasons. The biggest concern has been up and over is the riprap. The riprap really threatens my ability to work my shore, my most productive piece of shore, and it's been worrying me to death. When I first saw that, I went, the Corps has been downsizing the riprap, but in my opinion, that's even worse than the original proposal. And the smaller the rocks you get, the easier they're going to move in the storm. Like Wade said, they move all over the place. How can they even tell when you put a 50-pound rock in the water, what does it really weigh? I mean, you know, it doesn't weigh 50 pounds anymore. It weighs a whole lot less, and you can't even be sure it's going to go down exactly where you put it. So I just... That idea of the grid that the Corps puts out there, it looks like a big checkerboard, that's a joke. You can't say those rocks are going to go where they put them, and they sure as heck aren't going to stay there, not when we have the storms that we have in that river. A 30-foot buffer is not sufficient. In my opinion, no buffer is sufficient. That's too close. The workboat turns around, and that stuff's in my shore. And maybe you don't want, poachers, but what it's going to do is not going to prevent poaching. It's going to make my ground unworkable, and that is, to me, just not okay. Finally, they think it's a good idea because this is a permanent sanctuary and there's no reason for anybody to work the reefs again, and I think that's a fine hope, but it's also highly unlikely. Oyster ground, like Wade said, needs to be worked or they're going to die, and the oysters are going to die and sink in the mud. Putting riprap will ensure that those reefs can never be worked again, whether it's for watermen working them or whether you're just even trying to keep the sanctuary workable and viable. And if it dies, if the reef dies, how are you going to be able to get in there and do anything to reestablish the sanctuary? As far as the poaching goes, I think anybody on the Great Wicomico and any waterman will tell you that most of those oysters, or a lot of the ones, especially off Shalanga, they sank in the mud. And when we saw the barge out there with the water cannon originally putting those oysters, I mean, people were going, look at what the Corps of Engineers is doing with our tax dollars now. They're putting them in the mud. And that's what a lot of it happens. So if poaching prevention's needed, give it to Marine Resource Commission to hire some more policemen, and let's hire people and keep them out. The other thing is I'm worried about mortality to my current oysters from the silting, from the size of the equipment that's going to come in. Again, a 30-foot buffer, that's not going to mean anything as to whether those boats are going to swing around when they're, you know, planning stuff or whatever. It looks great on a chart, but on a lease, virtually nothing. And the scraping, you know, how can I guarantee that when they're scraping that that mud and whatnot that they're disturbing isn't going to, you know, move over on the oysters that I've got right now? Nobody wants to see restoration more than I do. When our oyster house closed in 1983, it nearly ruined my family. I had to leave the business. I was born and raised in it. My grandparents were in it. It's been, I'd love to see it come back. My older son is interested in it. He'd like to be able to come back and go to work there. But so nobody wants it more than I do. But studies that I've seen, and I attached an abstract to one of them by VIMS and VMRC, show that constructed reefs decline over time in comparison to subtidal bars. And I really feel that the building of these reefs, especially anymore, and on this scale, is going to be a waste of our time and money. And our fossil shell is limited, and I hate to see it used. I represent a couple of other people. I attached some letters from them on the back. From some most people weren't able to attend because of health reasons. EA says he's not going to talk, but he's been in the business, and I wish he would, because he can address some of the crab potting issues too. That could also, the crab potters are going to have a problem with these rocks out there. Anyway, thank you for listening to me. I'm sorry I went on so long, but I asked you to deny this permit. Please don't threaten my shore and use up our resources. And in 10 years, that reef might be dead, and it'll be too late to do anything with all those rocks all over the place. So at least don't let them put the riprap there and put some kind of tight restrictions on what kind of equipment if you have to let them build it. I'd prefer you didn't. But put some oysters out on Damerons or Blackberry.
Let's get I have a question.
Questions. Mr. Beck.
Okay. Yeah. What would be your feeling if you did nothing?
If we did nothing?
No, if the Corps of Engineers and the VMRC did nothing.
I'd be pleased.
Okay.
I think we're getting a good comeback, and we've seen a lot, not just in the Great Wacomico, but all around. We've had good strikes in all of the rivers recently, and we're seeing oysters growing again. We're seeing some disease resistance, and I think we're on the way back to recovery finally.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Who's next?
I've neglected to say that this is a shell of the 2012 strike, and I just wanted the commissioners to look at it. All right.
Thank you. Who's next? Yes, sir.
I get emotional.
My name is Alfred C. Henderson, Jr., better known as Al Henderson. I, as well as these folks, have been in the industry prior to my life, my family's life, and et cetera. And what I've seen in my lifetime, because I haven't done it quite 2 years old like Mr. Hall has, but I surely was probably 10, and I've seen cycles, you know, that the good Lord gave us that were highs and lows, and at the moment, the industry is doing very, very well. Now, I'm sure some of this has contributed to other agencies' efforts, and I applaud that. However, I am opposed as well because I do not approve of the riprap because of the moving issue. But also, this equipment that these folks tend to use, a foot and a half off the bottom, well, if you've got a little outboard, 25 horsepower, that's all fine. What if you've got a prop that's 4 feet in diameter, it's going to create prop wash and cover up my live oysters on my lease ground, which I'm certainly opposed to. Now, I'm just trying to preserve what we have, and I don't want anything to be jeopardized because of a program that the federal government wants to implement. Now, I understand that their intentions are really good. However, I don't feel that they're quite as constructive as they feel that they probably would be. And with that, I close.
Any questions? Okay, thank you. Next. Yes, sir.
I'm Dr. Linton Land from
Velia.
I taught oceanography for 20 years. I'm a board member of the Tidewater Oyster Gardeners Association, and I grow diploid seed oysters commercially. People have addressed two what I consider dangerous issues. First is the riprap. I don't think anybody who spoke here about it and believes it has been with a scuba tank in 10 feet of water on a reef, but I can guarantee you that just a light wind will move you around pretty good. What people haven't addressed is, look, if I want to poach those grounds, I'm going to get in my skiff on the dark night with a pair of tongs, and I'm going to poach this. There's absolutely no way you can stop it. You can tong those oysters up. So it's not a matter of dredging. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. So to me, putting the riprap down is, I think it's ridiculous. It's dangerous. The 30-foot buffer, again, somebody sat in their office. They took a ruler and they put 30 feet and they drew a line. If you ever been out there on the water with the wind blowing and the current riding, 30 feet is nothing.
Right.
Somebody said they're going to keep a propeller a foot and a half above the bottom. If I leave my dock with a foot and a half water under the boat and I put just one engine in gear with 12-inch screws, I leave a great plume of mud behind me. So a bigger vessel, especially if it's having to maneuver, is going to blow things everywhere. I don't know whether, Jeff, can you put up Reef 16?
Yep.
Reef 16 has leases on both sides of it, and they're going to scrape Reefs 1 and 2 and put them on Reef 16. Now, do you really believe that with two leases, with 30-foot buffer, and they're going to come in here with however they're going to put the shell down, do you really think with all the maneuvering that's going to have to be done with the boat and everything going in the water and the currents flowing, do you really believe that those leases are not going to get silted up? I mean, that's ridiculous, right? They're here. I'm a professor, so I always go armed. You know, here are your leases. You're not going to keep things off the leases as you deposit shell on top of that reef. It's impossible. So people who have active leases and they're working them have a concern. I was interested to see the Corps present, if I'm right about this, their first slide said rehabilitation and restoration, but that's the goal. And then I didn't see the word rehabilitation again. I saw restoration lots of times. Well, let's be honest. Let's be real. If by restoration you mean going back to where we were when Europeans first arrived, it's impossible. It cannot happen. If for no other reason than bay water quality is so terrible. And that simply has to be addressed. So the idea of restoration is something we've got to get out of our heads. Rehabilitation, yes. Improvement, yes. But let's not live in fantasy land. We're not going back to the days when Europeans first sailed into Chesapeake Bay. It's not going to happen. Now, I'd like to take a minute and address a bigger issue, which is we all want to get more oysters. We want to rehabilitate. We want more jobs. We want better ecology. We all want the same thing. How is the best way to do that? And I think if you got the 50 reef scientists who are best known in the room and you ask them, are sanctuary reefs the way to go? I think the vote would be no. There would be people vote yes. It wouldn't be unanimous. Sanctuary reefs, oyster reefs, not coral reefs, they work. Sanctuary oyster reefs don't work because the rate of mortality exceeds the rate of recruitment. As long as that's true, the reef is doomed. What we need to do is improve recruitment. That should be our goal. And how do you do that? Well, you need more recruits. You're not going to get them from the oysters that are down there today. It'll help. I mean, in 2012, several people have mentioned it. We had an immense strike. It was everywhere. It was even in the little Wicomico. This is where I live, and which is renowned for lousy strike. What happened? Boy, I wish I could answer that. But something happened naturally to induce that tremendous strike early in the season in 2012. So that says that it can be done. How do we get more recruits? Well, I think the answer is hatcheries. We simply need to get more larvae into the bay, onto a bottom where they can strike. And those larvae that come out of the hatchery are have been selectively bred for disease resistance, for longevity. They live longer. They release eggs and sperms more time. They grow thicker shells, which are better and will last longer. So if we're going to think ahead in this federal-state partnership that we're supposed to have, let's think a little out of the box, and let's think about improving the recruitment. And I suggest to you that one way to do it is ramp up existing hatcheries and build new hatcheries. And to me, that is where the hope comes from, not a sanctuary reef that's going to be gone. They're going to dredge reefs 1 and 2 and 3. Those are high relief reefs, the ones that are supposed to work. So why are they dredging them and moving the shell and starting all over? If the high relief reefs are the ones that work and we're trying to produce a sustainable environment, why are we going in there and scraping it and moving the shell and starting all over? So I think we need the question, as we go down the road, this whole concept of sanctuary, and think about how can we get more recruitment and I'll leave this back. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, sir. Who's next? Did I swear you in earlier?
Yes, sir. I'm all sworn in. Thank you, Commissioner, board members. I'm Chip Pudnell. I live on the Great Wicomico River. And I'd like to speak about a couple of things. I certainly am in agreement with all the opposition here, so I won't rehash those. But Mr. Madden, will you get that big picture up a minute ago of the Great Wicomico?
With all the streets on it?
Yes. Yes, sir. Navigation is a problem with me. I, too, like Mr. Beck, live on the Great Wicomico on Reef 8. Where is that gizmo?
Professor?
I live right there in that house. And this water is shallow right here. We have private-maintained markers coming across this reef right here, which I hope anybody didn't take them out. One is missing now. But you will not be able to get a boat back into this creek, which is Gouges Creek. There are a lot of homes on this creek right here. As well as over here, I'm not exactly sure about Ways Creek, but you can see how deep that is, and there are a lot of homes here. So I am a navigator, and that is a great concern of mine on the Great Wicomico River. That's about all I have.
Thank you.
Hey, come back a minute.
Yes, sir.
Point your house again. And then where would the reef be?
And the channel marker comes straight across here and then across that reef to get out. I particularly work this shore right here where that red dot is. Sometimes when I throw my dredger board, I can still see the top of the dredge into water.
So a reef would be built where? Now point again.
According to these gentlemen, it would be right here. The blue. The blue is the reef. And you can see the shallow water. You can see that deep hole right there. There's a day marker right here, private maintained day marker, not by the private maintained one right here is one right here.
And would your opinion, would the reef affect the flow?
It would affect the navigation, but especially
I understand
the
that.
Holes on the side. I'm not a person that can predict tides, so I don't know about the flow. You can see from this aerial photo right here as the water comes out of this creek, it's balling right here or whirling and making a deep hole right there. It's 8-9 feet of water right there. But it's also about a foot and a half right there at the point of that arrow there as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I agree with the replenishment of the oysters. Your question a while ago and Mr. Clipso's question, I don't know the answer between the two of you guys. My father was Yankee Hudnall, who used to be the replacement office for you guys years ago, so I'm certainly familiar with trying to get these oysters to grow again, and I don't know the gist of it. And not to pick on the Army Corps engineers, but just to give you a quick example, they're great people, don't get me wrong, but sometimes they're ill-fated. You might need more study, and to give you an example of that, New Orleans is a perfect example. Thanks.
Anyone else wishing to speak in opposition? Yes, sir. Ken. You weren't here when I swore everyone in, correct?
I swear to tell the truth.
You swear to tell the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the
nothing
truth,
but the
to God.
So help me God. My name's Ken Smith. I'm president of the Virginia Watermen's Association. I'm totally opposed to any more work done in the Rappahannock by the Corps of Engineers, any of it, altogether. I don't know whether it was 2, 3, 4 years ago, we went out there and looked around to see what kind of bottom it could be put up, that shells could be put on. I think the Corps of Engineers had $1 million up to $3 million that they could spend. And Dr. Wesson was on the boat, myself, I was on the boat, Chip Hudnall was on the boat. I was looking to see if I could see Mr. Fox in here. But you were on the boat, Mr. Travels did. And everywhere we looked, we could not find a good piece of hard bottom we could put shells on. And we were all under the agreement that shells being the commodity they are today, there could be something better done with them. That's what's being done. Another reason I'm objection to it is because Virginia's, I mean, we're governed by everybody because we've got species that swim. Here we've got a species that can't swim, and already here it is, the Corps of Engineers dictating to us what we can do on the Great Wicomico. We've got oyster bars on the Great Wicomico. Haney's Bar is a good example. We can't work it because of the sanctuaries up there. Everybody's scared of the poaching, so the Corps of Engineers says we can't work it. The poaching that would go on up there, it's not going to happen. I mean, if the Great Wicomico is not like the Potomac River. You can see from shore to shore. You can see who's on a piece of shore they're not supposed to be on. If you go out there at night to dredge it where nobody can see you, nobody's going to go out there and dredge those old snappy oysters that thin-shelled, all stuck together. I mean, you couldn't make time on it anyway. And no buyer's going to buy that trash. It's, like I say, I'm just totally opposed to it. If anything, I'd like to see the Corps of Engineers out of the Great Wicomico altogether. I thank you. Mr. Close, you clean up nice. I tell you, you really do. And the waterman told me to thank you for coming up here, that they appreciate what you're doing. And while I say thank you to them, I'm thanking the governor because he couldn't have made a better choice.
I agree with you. Anyone else in opposition? All right. Seeing none, we're going to go back to the Corps, and you get a chance to respond to any of the concerns that. I suppose so. Okay. Thank you. So noted. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks again. We respect and appreciate all the comments we've heard, so I'm not here to dispute the comments or argue against them, but I will give some of our responses to some of the specific issues that were brought up. Obviously, if there's any damage or impact to private areas, the Corps and the contractors are liable for that. So obviously it's not like we can go out and do whatever we want in any area and not be liable. So I did want to make sure that was understood. As with any project, federal or state, if damage and impacts occur, there's liability for that.
Quick question, Susan. I'm sorry, counsel for the commission. And I'm not familiar with this, but is there any way that the Federal Tort Claims Act or federal sovereign immunity extends to any of these folks? Because suing the Corps is one thing, suing a private individual or company is another.
That is outside of my realm of expertise, but I can take that question back to our counsel.
That would be awesome.
Can you write it down for me?
I'll tell you what, I'll do you one better and give you my card and you can give it to him.
Okay. Also wanted to bring up the point, a lot of what we're proposing, at least from my perspective, is not that much different than a lot of the activities that are happening out there now. I know that Shell is taken out and placed now, and I know that oysters are brought up out there in the river now. So we are not asking to do anything dramatically different from that. Other than the riprap, I do understand that that is a difference. We continue to think that that is the one option that we have come up with to address the poaching, and again, it is our mission and responsibility to protect the projects we build. So that, if we would love there to be additional ideas or concepts, but that's what we've come up with, and we've done calculations and made adjustments, so we don't think that it would be an impact, but we absolutely hear and respect the comments that have been brought up on that. There was also some question about the mortality rate overtaking the rate of the growth of the oysters. In both the Lynn Haven and Great Wicomico, and I bet Rom's itching to stand up and talk here too, but we do have 6, 7, 8-year-old oysters. Many of the oysters seem to be showing disease resistance. Obviously, it's part of a larger concept. We have to improve the water quality. We have to build disease resistance to build those promote those oysters that will have long-term viability. So we do understand that there have been concerns in the past with disease killing off the oysters and the mortality rate being high, but we do feel like this is the way to take the tributary towards a self-sustaining population and getting towards the concept of restoration. Someone mentioned the rehabilitation concept. When we talk about rehabilitation, we were using it in the terms of we had built a prior federal project in 2004. So this is the rehabilitation to go back to those areas that were not successful for whatever reason, rehabilitate. We absolutely understand and don't think we can get back to the historic level of oysters in the Chesapeake Bay. Obviously, that's not reasonable. But we do think, and the Corps of Engineers, not just the Norfolk District, believes it is possible to take the Chesapeake Bay back to tributaries where you do have self-sustaining populations of oysters, and that is our goal on this and other oyster projects. But I think that's all I have to say, unless any of the other Corps of Engineers or ROM have anything else to say.
Let me I have some questions.
Okay.
I think others will, and then we will hear from you, ROM. If I think one thing we heard consistently from all of those who just spoke was concern about the riprap, the stone. If the commission were to not approve the placement of any stone, would the project still go forward?
Yes, we would still build the project.
Okay. Any other questions?
I didn't hear your question.
The question was, if the commission were to not allow the placement of any stone, would the Corps still move forward with the project, the other parts of the project? And the answer was yes, they would.
And let me caveat that a little bit. I think, and the technical team thinks, the project will move forward. We would have to go back and check with our leadership just to ensure. But I believe the project would move forward.
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Connor? Mr. Ersch?
Susan, I was wondering if there's been any thought as to the beginning of this project, whether or not it's going to take place during the reproductive season, whether or not you're going to be impacting, you know, the recruitment to the river.
Okay, so what, I'm not sure if this is the question you're asking, but we can't dredge the fossil shell for February through May or June, I believe it is, mm-hmm. And also for optimal recruitment, we plan to want to intentionally place the shell next summer, where we would hope to be doing this in summer 2014.
So I guess my concern is there's a possibility for spawning and reproductive recruitment you know, anywhere from end of May, let's say middle of May, until September. Maybe even early October, I guess, there would be an opportunity for that.
So ideally, we'd be placing at the very beginning, like just prior to or at the beginning of that, but it all works when we can get the dredged fossil shell and when we can get our contracting process to move. I mean, how
but
how
you
that
you can't do that till June 15th. I don't think it is. You can't dredge shell before June 15th. So you're saying you would start to place shell and bring and start to do the work after June 15th?
We would want to. I mean, we don't want to wait until after to the end of the summer, and then we're placing shell and it's sedimenting. There's sedimentation over it before the next recruitment season. So, I mean, that is something that we would be more than happy to sit down and coordinate and discuss if anyone has concerns, and we can all agree upon within our contractual limitations. We can agree upon what we would all think is the best time to place it. But everything, all of my understanding says that we should place it so that we can get that strike pretty quickly. But we're happy to discuss and coordinate that. I don't think that should be a major concern.
Well, I think there needs to be concern about, you know, going into these other areas where it's productive, you know, on private grounds I'm talking about, and possibly disrupting any larval production that would take place as you get in there in June, certainly in June, July, August.
But what would be the alternative that you would suggest?
To store the shell until the following spring and you know, collect your shell and do all the dredging in June of this year, coming year 2014, and then you'd start your reefs, constructing them in the spring of 2015.
And generally the problems, we've come upon these situations before and generally have a problem on where to store the shell. It's not so easy. And just also contractually how we let the contract as a matter of we had given notice to proceed, they need to proceed and build it. So that could be a little tricky to say, okay, we got to dredge the shell, then we got to store it for the better part of a year, then we got to go complete the contract. So not saying we couldn't do it, but I can tell you right now that in the past when we've had this question, it's not been easy to do what you're asking.
Other questions?
One more, just briefly.
Mr. Beck.
Has this riprap approach been done elsewhere?
It has not been done in Virginia for anti-poaching. Very similar, basically the exact same.
That's the principal reason for poaching?
Yes, sir. It's been used as alternative substrate in Maryland and other areas. And I mean, we put reef balls and other things in the Lafayette and you know, Chesapeake Bay Foundation, all of our oyster restoration partners have put similar things down in rivers. So, and they would all be at, most of them are at a depth. Most of them are deeper than 8 feet. Most of them are not within 1 or 2 feet. We would not, obviously, would never intentionally place something that would be a navigational hazard.
All right. No other questions. Dr. Lipsius, you had some additional?
Yeah, just what Susan had mentioned and what Dr. Lang, I believe, mentioned, the idea of restoring that up to about 10 years ago, I think many in the restoration community thought that might be a good goal, but that's no longer. For the last 10 years, we realized we have very different changed or altered ecosystems, and we have to go with what's there. So, he's right. I mean, but we no longer feel that way. The second thing about the meaning that we have to work with what we have, and we can try to improve, rehabilitate, restore. So restoration is now viewed more as rehabilitation or bringing it to a better state than it is now. I think very few of us believe that we can bring it back to what it was in the 1600s, 1700s. So I agree with that. The sanctuaries in the Great Waicomico, and this is over, they were built in 2003 and 2004. We started sampling them in 2006. We've sampled them through 2012. In that 9-year period, they have not been maintained. They are meeting the fisheries goal implementation team standards for performance success. They are, in fact, all the high relief is exceeding the target, not just the threshold. The threshold is 15 adult oysters per square meter. The target is 50 adult oysters per square meter. The high relief reef that is built shallower than 15 feet on good bottom is far exceeding that. We're getting averages of 150 to 200 adult oysters per square meter. It goes down as you go deeper. It goes down as you go to low relief, and it goes down as you go to mud. I would not build anything, as the Corps is not proposing to build anything deeper than 15 feet on mud. So the idea of a self-sustaining population is real. I mean, when it was only 3-4 years old, yes, I think you had to think about, okay, how long is it going to succeed? And our most recent sampling are before that fantastic 2012 spat fall. So those reefs now are probably doing even better than some of the data that you, Commissioner, have seen at the GIT meeting. So I think the same thing holds for the Lynn Haven. That also is meeting the restoration standards. So, again, the idea of a self-sustaining population is real. One final comment. It's often stated that bars need to be cleaned to restore or to make them suitable for settlement, and we totally agree with that. In fact, that's what we see on the low-relief reefs. If they are not in some way rehabilitated, they will become silted over time. And you do have to clean. So actually, there's not a conflict between what we're saying with the high relief reefs being self-sustaining and the low relief, very thin shell, requiring some kind of bar cleaning. They actually are both true. It's not one or the other.
Any questions? All right. Thank you. Dr. Lugenbach.
For the new commissioners, I'm Mark Lukenbach. I'm Associate Dean of Research and Advisory Services at the Virginia Institute of Marine Science. I have actually considerable – I don't have expertise in everything I stand before you on, but I do on oyster reef restoration. Among those things is the an author, in fact, the principal author of that of the Bay Program Sustainable Fisheries Goal implementation. A couple of just quick technical things, and I apologize if I'm telling some of you things you know. You have heard today, and Ram Dr. Lucius just referred to it, issues about whether or not reefs have to be worked to or bars do to be sustainable. You have heard a statement that recruitment and oyster growth is less than the mortality and the degradation. You should always be skeptical of all those types of things. It's really variable out there. And I think it's pretty clear from what we know right now is if you take your average rate of shell loss and mortality in the Chesapeake Bay and your average rate of recruitment, it's a net negative gain. All that says is we shouldn't be restoring oysters in average places. So think about it. And clearly, parts of the Great Waicomico aren't average. Clearly, and in numbers of places, for many years, we have found that adding additional substrate, when you're working in the right place, can matter, can get you over that hump. The booger's in the details. It's really in the details. With respect to this Great Waicomico project, it will be in the details of why those degraded parts are degraded. I don't know if we have all that answered yet or not, but you've heard some of that. Some of the unresolved issues that I take out of some of this that are still concerned, you've obviously heard about the riprap, is one, a very large amount of shell. Is it justified against the other uses that we have for shell? I suggest that that's going to depend on why those degraded spots are degraded and how well they're going to perform, and that might be different on each of those reefs. But maybe more importantly, and I'll preface this by saying that I understand the importance of sanctuaries. I've worked to help set some of the goals and metrics that we use. What we've got in the Great Waicomico is the scale of a project that it's not been clear what has set that scale, if you will. It is true there are, in this Bay-wide agreement, this goal implementation team, there's some guidelines at the tributary scale, there's some guidelines at the reef scale. Dr. Lips has indicated that these high-relief areas are doing extremely well with the goals at the reef scale. And Commissioner, I know you have a copy of that.
think if you go back and look at that, you'll see that at the tributary scale, there are some wide range of percentages of restorable areas that are set. But it's also prefaced by the statement, this is a new science, restoring things at the tributary level. And so what I'm getting to on this is I think the issue of how much shell, it comes back at some point, not just the need to build high relief reefs, but how many reefs. Is the Great Waikamako in need of more sanctuaries? That hasn't been part of a discussion. There's been a discussion, are sanctuaries good or bad? Or is this just to round out an acreage? Some of that, I think, is, I don't know the time course on this. I don't know what flexibility is there. But it strikes me that there are some details that could be worked out on this, rather than simply have the amount of shell being driven by the need to build out that amount of sanctuary. Maybe somebody has those calculations and knows why that's the key amount and why that is worth this really critical resource. I don't know what those calculations are. I frankly don't know how they'd be done at this point. But anyway, I offer that as one who's worked in this area with at least some way for you to consider both the value and you know, it's pretty clear that these sanctuary reefs had a lot of recruitment. It's happening really almost Virginia-wide. The Great Waikamako has had some exceptional recruitment, so we don't want to discount the role these sanctuaries may have played. I asked Jim Wesson a question last week, I think. He couldn't answer it. I don't know who could. Of all the oysters in the Great Waikamako right now, what percentage of them are on sanctuaries and what percentage of them are on private grounds? I don't know that answer. I don't know if any one person has their hands on it. I think it's a really relevant thing to think about when you're thinking about what's the contributor to this big spawn. Is it being driven by what's being by the private grounds and their planting? Is it being driven by the sanctuaries? These are things we don't know yet, and I think it might at least bear some discussion in a broader forum.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. I believe with that, the matter is before the commission.
Mr.
Brown, yes. I think the matter is now before the commission. We appreciate your comments earlier, and I think we've got enough to deliberate on at this point. This is a tough issue, I know, for the commission, given the volume of public comment that we've had on it. Assuming you're interested in my opinion, I'll be glad to offer it. We started this project with the Corps in 2003, and I think in general I'm of the opinion that we need to finish what we started. Unfortunately, there is so much lack of clarity when it comes to oyster restoration. The scientific advice is, from one end of the spectrum to the other. You could, even within VIMS, you could put all of the scientists into a room and you could come out with widely varying opinions on how we need to proceed. So it makes it that much more difficult on us and on the managers. But, it seems to me that there ought to be one place in this state where we attempt to determine the value of permanent oyster sanctuaries, and we sort of started this in the Great Waikamako, and I think we still potentially can learn a lot from that. I would note that the Corps has agreed to most of the conditions that the staff has recommended, the one-inch screening, the clearance off the bottom, and a coordinated meeting, a 30-foot offset. They're not going to use water cannons to deploy the shell. I think you'll see much smaller vessels used there. That's obviously going to add to the cost. And when you add to the cost, it means you have to plant that much more shell, because that's how the state meets the matching requirement I wish there were another way for the state to meet the matching requirement. For instance, if we had the cash, we had the cash to meet that requirement, we wouldn't be talking about this volume of oyster shell. The Corps could be putting riprap down or concrete slabs or whatever on these grounds and then covering them with a very thin veneer of shell, much less quantities of shell. But we don't have that opportunity here. Based on what I've heard, I do have some concern about the placement of the riprap. I think those concerns are legitimate, and I would be inclined at this point to not recommend approval of the placement of the riprap until we know a little bit more and do a little bit more research in that area. This is not a perfect project, but it is one that I think we can learn from. And as a result, I think, you know, the risks are worth taking at this point. I wouldn't recommend this model for anywhere else at this time. In fact, I'll tell you, we're working with others on a restoration project in the Piankatank River that will probably look substantially different than this. But unfortunately, we don't have those options for the Great Wicomico. So that's sort of where I am on it. I'd welcome any other thoughts or comments from the others. Mr. Tanker.
I concur with a lot of what you've said, Commissioner. I feel like that we're building on an already successful model of these sanctuaries. The sanctuaries do exist. We're really not debating whether or not to have a sanctuary. Some of our comments led us to believe that maybe we wouldn't have a sanctuary. We give up on sanctuaries, but they're not going to go anywhere. They're going to be there no matter what because we've designated them to be so. I think that for my part of it, we know poaching can exist around the state. We've seen that. We've had testimony today that shows us that poaching there's a certain high-level probability that poaching has occurred in the Wicomico. I would have a tendency to go with the original class stone that was suggested. I think there's also the element of having the three-dimensional part of the reef that's positive, as Dr. Lipschitz stated, and I see no navigational hazard to those stones, and I think that it is a positive. It is state money, we're contributing shells and the federal government is contributing money. It's an investment, and I think we have to protect that investment for the taxpayers of both the Commonwealth and the country. So I kind of think Class 1 stone, and I would also go with the recommendations of staff with regard to the other things that have been presented as well. So that would be my takeaway on it, to increase the class of stone. We've had good success on the seaside of Virginia where we have big storms, high tides, significant currents, with oyster castles, and we've seen no movement. So a big piece of riprap seems kind of larger than the oyster castles we've seen on the seaside of Virginia. So that'd be my takeaway on it.
Mr. Erskine.
I appreciate the comments and everybody taking the time to be here and certainly having their input. It's a difficult, obviously a difficult proposal, and it has benefit. I think I'm encouraged by hearing some of the industry that said, you know, we want to work with the Corps. Some of these meetings that are going to take place, I'm encouraged by that. That we might have a collaboration that's beginning to provide further input. I share the commissioner's concern about the riprap and the placement of that. I think it leads to a site-specific issue. This river is very different than some of the James River or maybe the Potomac larger tributaries, where we took some pretty drastic measures here recently in deterring some of that poaching and some of the theft that's been taking place on private and public grounds. So I think we are starting to move in the direction of increasing law enforcement as opposed to putting permanent structures that could impede navigation and be a concern for a smaller tributary like this. So I share your concern, Commissioner, that the riprap is problematic for this. But I'm encouraged by the collaboration that I see with industry and the Corps and all the partners coming together on something like this.
Other comments? Dr. Neal.
Yeah, my comment is near Ed's. I feel that the reefs are there. We've entered an agreement. This I agree with you. We should finish the project. And the riprap actually sounds beneficial to me. Actually, we're protecting the reefs and providing not just anti-poaching, just more substrate for the oysters. And it seems like more concerns with the riprap would be increased using smaller stuff. And so I would use the larger riprap. And I think it would be a beneficial part of the project. And so basically everything Ed said, I agree with.
Okay. Other comments? Ms. Haney.
One group we didn't hear from were the crab potters and the peeler potters and the eel potters in these areas. And I think crab pots and peeler pots are set in all of these areas. How is the riprap going to affect the crab potters, peeler potters? I mean, it's something we haven't heard testimony from.
Okay. Any other comments? Mr. Tanker.
I would just follow up by saying, you know, with regard to the riprap, we know that the fossilized oyster shells are limited. I think this also gives us a chance to see how these type of elements in the water are receptive to strike and helping to build reefs. If, in fact, we know in the long-term future we're going to have to build reefs with something other than oyster substrate.
Agreed. The chair will entertain a motion. Mr. Tanker.
I move that we accept staff recommendations on everything except for the Class 1 riprap stone. We accept the use of Class 1 riprap stone.
All right. So your motion is to approve the application subject to the recommendations of staff, with the exception that you want to modify the Class 1A stone to the heavier Class 1
yes,
stone.
Yes, sir.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Seconded by Dr. Neal. Comments on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Let me see a show of hands on that. One, two. Show of hands, all those in favor. Three. All those opposed, same sign. One, two, three, four. That motion fails. Accept another motion.
Go ahead.
Mr. Erskine.
I'd make a motion to accept staff recommendation eliminating the poaching deterrent riprap, period.
Okay. Everyone understands the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Sessions. Any discussion?
One thing.
Ms. Haney.
Should we consider the 30-foot buffer at this point? I mean, does that need to be extended? We spoke of that earlier.
That's open for discussion. Right now, it's a part of the application. So if you do nothing and the motion passes, the 30-foot offset would be there. You can, if anyone wants to change that 30-foot, you could offer a substitute motion or an amendment to the motion.
Well, I'd like to make an amendment to increase, maybe double that 30-foot buffer.
All right. So there's a motion to amend 30-foot offset to 60 feet. Is there a second to that motion? Is there a second to that motion? No. Hearing no second, that proposed amendment fails. We're back to the main motion. Any further discussion on the main motion? Mr. Tank.
I certainly understand and sympathize with the motion being made. I just don't think we're accepting the realities of the oyster world as we know it. Poaching exists, and we're making strides towards enforcement, but this is serious public money that's being invested in this river. And if we don't take precautions for that public investment, I don't think we're one, taking on the realities of the situation, and also I don't think we're also taking on the responsibilities of the situation.
Any further discussion? Okay, Mr. Erskine.
I just respond to, and I can appreciate where the commissioner is coming from, and I think we are taking strides to do it the proper way, and that's law enforcement, and that's imposing the penalties that we have placed in the code and in the law, as opposed to placing a permanent structure out there that will be there and potentially can impede navigation and or move. I think the proper way to do it is enforcement of the law, and hopefully we're moving in that direction. So
I would also note that, and it goes back to Dr. Luthenbach's comments, that you know perhaps down the road we're going to learn more about the Great White Comico, and particularly in terms of what is the correct number of sanctuaries for this area, and are they located in the correct place? And suppose we do learn that we can live with less sanctuaries or place them in different locations, and as a result, reopen some of these areas. If you've placed heavy stone there, I think you might preclude that ability. Whether or not that happens, I don't know. I think it's something that we may understand better down the road. But in that regard, I guess I see the riprap causing some trouble. Any final comments? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Motion carries. Thank you.
For one note.
Two notes. Thank you all. Appreciate your time. We're going to break for lunch at this point, and we will come back at approximately 1 o'clock and pick up the agenda under item 10, Kingsmill.